But when a person, when people reach that level, isn't it the need for these things also sort of over? Let's say a photograph, you know. A person, I think a very realized person would not feel the need of a picture, you know, a photograph of his guru.
Right.
What is here? What do you want, a piece of paper?
Good, but let me point out something. Thousands of people are sitting down in front of the master, and we have thousands of different interpretations of the master, and thousand different needs from that master. Some may be so childish, some may be beyond our comprehension. The master feels a need. That's all he's doing, he's filling a need. Now the need that's being filled may seem unusual to some people. It is never he asks you what you want. They never say, I'm going to make something for you. The Sai Baba doesn't come out and say that. There's always somebody says, Master, can I have this? And, well, it's all right. Go ahead. There's the camera, photograph. But this is this is normal for the man to take a photograph of Sai Baba and have the picture developed and give it to you. But I'm saying, if Sai Baba is a manifestation of what man would be when he's in the Satyug period, that camera would not be existent. It's not the vehicle for communication. It would be a throwback in time. A camera would be out of place in Satyug period. You follow what I'm trying to say? Why would you use a camera if you are in the Satyug period, and here you have a living example of what a Satyug man is. In other words, he is ahead of his time. You are not in that time. He is ahead of his time. So he is speeding up time with consciousness. He's showing you how time is speeded up with consciousness. So by doing that through consciousness, he is speeded up, he has encapsulated time. This is a very scientific principle. In time, scientists will learn this principle of transmutation of matter. This is nothing that we're not going to discover. These laws are all here. Everything is going to be discovered. But he is only compressing time to fulfill a need. Now the need is not necessarily a religious need. At the moment in the person's life, it may feel as a religious need, because the awe and the splendor of the and the majesty of the master. In the highest realization, it is the spirituality of the thing to see that here, for the first time, the condensation of forces are bringing about reality. Now, this person who is receiving this thing, if he is a very advanced, aware person, he will see how slow his consciousness is in relation to Sai Baba's consciousness. Following? No, I don't say for a person who is undeveloped. I'm talking a person who is fairly developed and can see what is going on and understand and comprehend the principles that are involved in this thing. He will see how far he is from this goal. He will get a ratio of his development. It will be like a master of arts seeing a PhD or a BA seeing a PhD do something, you see. So one is at the end of the thing, and the other one is in the midpoint. Now, the student in the first grade cannot comprehend a PhD. It takes a PhD to comprehend a PhD. But a man of BA can have some comprehension of what a PhD is. So this would be the exact thing that is happening. Sai Baba, being an example of what the Satyug man would be, is compressing time to give man in this present time a glimpse of the ratio of limitation of his consciousness that he has to overcome. So these things are done not primarily to encourage or develop spiritual bhav in the person or spiritual endeavor, but it's strictly to make him realize what lies ahead in his growth, what the tremendous obstacles he may have to overcome to achieve his growth. We don't realize that what the obstacles we are to overcome. We think getting through one little incarnation and get out of the whole picture, that we're going to go and sit in cloud nine with and play strings, you know, harp, and then we're happy, not more than anything. No. The thing is, there is more work to be done on our consciousness. The scientists are admitting today that we only use 1/10 portion of the brain. The other 9/10 are not even being used. And that 9/10, now they are making measurements on people's brains who have bridged this development. And they've only done this on yogis, because yogis are the only people who can go to some other level of awareness that the ordinary man can't go in. And they're finding out how erratic this machine can be, especially if the man is very, very evolved. The more evolved he becomes, is the more erratic that thing gets. I'm afraid if they put it inside Baba, the machine may collapse. Because the vibrate, you see, the thing is this, the energy will go back into the machine and burn it. Because you're dealing with a human body with billions of cells, and this is atoms already. And one atom got so much power in it. Imagine a body weighing 130 to 140 pounds. How much atomic energy you got locked up in here? You're not even using. You can't even begin to use it. Fantastic. And we're seeing an example of a brain that is awakened to this true potential. That there is no limitation to this brain. Because thought is energy, and energy crystallized becomes matter. So by doing this, the thought of a picture, how fast time is encapsulated and compressed into a crystallized physical form to take shape, that would require the normal slow process of little ground lens, little black box, a little chemicals on a piece of paper, and a little light to crawl inside of, you make a picture. Look how many years it took man to crawl with his limited consciousness to make a photographic machine. When the master is saying, by an illustration, that all this is within the brain, and encapsulating time, this is done. But it's not done to elate the ego.
No, that wasn't done.
What is, as I said before, we do not understand what he's doing. The only way you can understand what he's doing is to know that he is an example of what the Sat Yoga man is. Because in Sat Yoga, there is no mechanical gadgets no more. Every man is allied in God. The consciousness is all there. There is so much purity in consciousness now that everything begins to materialize. Now, you read in the autobiography of a yogi that in certain realms, the higher beings, if they wanted something, they just think of it and it materialized. This is in the autobiography of a yogi. Now, we are assessing masters today with a Kali Yuga consciousness. We cannot assess these masters with this kind of consciousness. We have to understand, we have to step out of that consciousness into a new dimension before we can assess them. We'd have to bring our consciousness up to that level to comprehend them. Well, I have a friend that has never left the United States to go and see Sai Baba. And Sai Baba materializes him every day and teaches him in the United States, and flies around with him in his plane. And Sai Baba materializes everything, the pictures and everything in the house, the vibhuti and everything. Now, if that man was imagining this thing, Sai Baba told someone who's very close to him, an Indian man who's doing research papers, that Mr. So-and-so will write you a letter. And in this letter he would say, Sai Baba visited him. And he'll tell you certain things in the letter. And when that letter did come, it was exactly as Sai Baba described it. And the man had never left America yet to go to India. And he still lives in the States here. And he is right now in the process of printing Sai Baba's work and doing English corrections in it. So the thing is, what is Sai Baba doing? What is he really doing? Most people don't understand it. That we are seeing a man who is from a level, an age that this earth and all the planets go through. We are seeing a human being at an age, from a different age, living with us for the first time. You know, science fiction, we never see people go back in time. Imagine Christopher Columbus going back to the pyramid and telling people the world is run. What would the people in the pyramid do to him? This is a concept. Let's say we have MacArthur going back and tell the early Americans how to fight Cochise. He would be out of time. His military genius is out of time. So he would be considered a multi-super genius or whatever. He would be somebody out of time doing these things too fast for them. This is exactly what is happening to us here. We're seeing an example of such a consciousness in our existence. That doesn't say there are other masters who are fully realized, taking us back into God by the natural sequence. Sai Baba is not doing that for us. He didn't say he's doing that. Sai Baba has come among us to reactivate, not only as an example of what Sat Yogi is, but he is reactivating Sanatana Dharma. For the first time, the real Sanatana Dharma has never had a chance to come out of the Kaliya period. You know, he was the only man that found the five lingams that Shankara buried. For how many years Shankara buried those lingams and nobody knows where it was? And Shankara lived in a Treta Yuga period, not a Satya period. So it would take a man from Satya period to discover the works of a Treta Yuga period. No one had to be above to come down. A man, a PhD, was the one who will decipher an MA's work. You see what I'm trying to say? Yeah. Shankara lived in a Treta period and buried the lingams in the various parts of India. And from Treta we had Dwapara, and Dwapara we had the Kaljuga. So that whole period, all those things were lost. Now, where are we going to find these lingams that we read so much? How are these people going to really believe that this is really true? Where are this knowledge? Where is this thing that is supposed to be buried? And now comes a man among us and takes it out from the womb. We have so much evidence of it. Reincarnation. And now we'll go into a little deeper aspect of it. Let's take one part of the scriptures which says, "To him that overcometh, I will not send forth a second time, but I will make him a pillar in the house of my Lord." Now, that means to a man or a woman who overcome what? What is there to overcome that you won't go for the second time? Ah, the answer is there, right? But the mathematical figure is there too. Is there a one-time existence or a proportionately opportunity existence in terms of repetition? If one lifespan doesn't permit us to overcome, then we need a proportionate opportunity existence in terms of eternity to overcome. And this is true justice. There can be no dictator in the form of a God demanding total sacrifice at the end of one life for your ignorance. It has to be a proportionate process because it proves itself. Now, I didn't make the statement. It was a great master who said that. To him that overcometh, he will not go forth a second time, but I will make him a pillar in the house of my Lord. Now, let's say he overcomes, as we establish ignorance is the real thing to overcome, the ability to ignore, to be caught in this process of ignoring. Let's say he overcomes that, or she overcomes it, and don't go forth a second time, or that does not go forth the 100th time, because you cannot say this is the first time. It might be his 100th time he attempted to go to overcome that ignorance and succeeded. It will be his first time in 100 trials. You see? Now, let's say he has overcome. Now, I will make him a pillar in the house of my Lord. Now, this house rests on certain pillars. These are fixed properties of the house. A fixed property does not change, does not fluctuate no more. It's not evanescent. There's a sense of permanence even. Now, if I will make that being who has overcome ignorance a pillar, then that being cannot lose his identity, cannot lose his conscious relationship with the creative intelligence. It's established permanently now for the first time. A pillar in the house of my Lord. Now, this house of the universe has many levels of existence. We have the physical level, we have an astral level, we have a causal level, we have a spiritual level, and we have a non-vibratory level. Which one of these levels this pillar will fit in depends on what has been overcome. Now, let's say we make him the pillar of the window, or the doorpost, or somewhere out in whichever that particular thing is most important to this building, that's where that one thing will be. Now, what has been overcome by his soul will rest in one of these categories: physical, astral, causal, spiritual, non-vibratory. You follow so far? Okay. So we know that to overcome ignorance, which is the stumbling block, what is it that we do that make us act ignorantly? Our behavior, right? There is no other thing that can act ignorantly but within a human person than his behavior. Now, let's see if there are certain rules of behavior that are required to overcome. Now, let's take the life of Master Jesus. He gave the sermons on the Mount, and how did they begin? And that whole sermon is called the what? The what?
The
Beatitudes. The attitudes of behavior. You know, to how to be. That's the verb, how to be, how to behave. How to act for the first time. So, if those actions are required to overcome ignorance, to prevent you from going forth your 102nd time, then you see you have the whole essence of liberation in a nutshell. But you got to live it, you got to experience it now. This is not word of mouth. This is
fusion of consciousness with energy by effort. You have to bring your consciousness on a certain potential energy called your body through a certain action, which is those attitudes, in order to get this result. And the results are specifically outlined at the end of the sentence. So let's hear one more. Blessed are the what?
Well, the results are for blessed are the pure and spirit of heart, they shall see God.
All right. The attitude is expressed, and the result is expressed. Blessed are the pure in spirit, for they shall see God. Now, first, to be pure in spirit is an attitude. This takes in your mental nature, your physical nature, your astral nature, your causal nature, and your spiritual nature, and your psychic nature. In order to see God. But you're not going to see somebody sitting on a throne. You're going to experience the totality of yourself, the godness of self, which is freedom. And this is liberation. This is the moksha we're talking about. This is the freed while living, mukti. Salvation is another name for it. Saved now. My sins are wiped out. My ignorance is gone. What did Solomon pray for? Wisdom and understanding. But understanding is blessedness, understanding is righteousness.
Is that the whole meaning of, in the Old Testament, using, they personify wisdom, Sophia, and that the thing, wisdom is the thing.
All right. When we say wisdom, wisdom is not knowledge. Big difference between wisdom and knowledge. Meditation is an acquired wisdom. Education is an acquired knowledge. Now, when you've meditated on what you're studying in theology, there are two vast sets of results in your mechanism. You know the knowledge of theology, and you can write it out, but you don't have any experience of that theology. When you meditate, there are certain things that are changing within your mechanism that gives you a sense of perception. They heighten these perceptions. They give you different revelations within your mechanism. Different senses come into play. Now, no theology can give you that. Now, judgment, strength, peace, humility, love, devotion, all that is wisdom. A wise man is not a man who knows too much, it's a man who knows nothing but can be. Answer your question. There's nothing there to say, but it has been transferred already. It passes. Now you understand darshan. You see the masters, and people want his darshan. They want that transfer. Alright, we were talking about reincarnation again. Let's look at it. We have a living example of it every day in the four seasons. Here is a tree. In spring, it's planted and grows right through the summer, the fall, and the winter. You may say at winter it should die. But comes the next spring, what happens? the tree is coming back up again. So we plant tomatoes and we get oranges according to the law of the universe. And Jesus Christ was right when he said, what you sow, you reap. So that should be true. Plant an orange tree and get tomatoes. That should be right. So if that is not right, then how are we going to say we have a right to be better than the other person for the conditions we're suffering from? Why, how are we going to say there should be equalities and not inequalities? If the very law does not permit our orange tree to give forth tomatoes, and each one of us is a unique example of life in the human body with its own potential qualities, distinct from every other individual, his own load of karma carrying within him, his own seeds to sprout, his own fruit to bear and replenish and harvest. Is there any inequality now? Isn't there total equality and justice in this one law? All right, birds and worms live off the same tree. Don't you think your environment and the social programming are like birds and parasites off of this human tree? They feed on you till you're age 21, and by that time, you're already dry rot and can't face the next winter. See? Now, let's say the tree is the human being. We see the process of repeating itself, spring, summer, winter, or autumn, winter, the same fruit coming forth. We are seeing a reincarnating process. We are not seeing something different, a rebirth. It's a reincarnating process. We see a repetitional process of a natural law existing in this world. We don't see no change. This would be like a wheel ground out all the time. There can be no way to get off this wheel. The seed would never change or become any other type of plant. Now, to him that overcometh, I will not send forth a second time, there must be some kind of grafting system, some kind of a modification system that will change this process.
Well, wait a minute. I thought we were supposed to be evolving,
not just
going around and around like the oak tree putting on green leaves year by year, but rather changing.
Man is changing, yes. Let's go something. Let's see first what you're talking of and recognize what it really is, and let's see ourselves first. The tree goes through the normal routine year in and year out with the same product. And that is reincarnating. No. You have ever seen a grubby worm? You ever see how it gorges itself until it spins a cocoon around itself? And then all of a sudden, here comes out a bigger worm with two pair of wings. Beautiful colors on his back. But you don't call him a grubby old worm with a pair of wings no more. What do you call him? A butterfly, eh? How did he become a butterfly? You mean somebody up there, the magic stick, wiggled their finger and changed him into a butterfly? But it happens all the time. It's right here. From a worm into a butterfly. And he has to eat himself to death. He has to spin this web around himself like a cocoon and then come forth as a new creature. So he must have overcome something. So we have a living example in nature now of overcoming and becoming a new structure, a new identity. We are seeing now not reincarnation, we are seeing resurrection. Now, resurrection and reincarnation are two different principles. man is to evolve into a resurrected state like that grubby little worm into a butterfly. But man is not to remain in the same old reincarnating cycle like an apple tree. Now, certainly between you and I, we're better than the apple tree and that grubby little worm. Why? We are man, male and female. We're endowed with certain chakras or centers, psychic forces that are locked up in our mechanism for the evolution or the unraveling into a God realization, the fullness of God. But we still have to obey natural laws. We cannot transcend natural laws. We have to live with natural laws. We have to obey these natural laws. But we need guidance in the natural laws. That's where we have masters who tell us how to behave. We can reincarnate all the time, and our behavior will start to go downwards. We can resurrect ourselves by changing our entire behavior. Now, Jesus once said, when he was in the body, take up your cross and follow me. That means each one of us has to make this journey towards resurrection from a reincarnating environment or process by his own initiative, by his own internal suffering, his own internal obligation and sacrifice, his own inner devotion, and nobody else can do it for you. But you need inspiration, and it's the inspiration that helps you to model your life on the highest ideal. One who has mastered life, that's why they're called masters. They're not your master, they're not my master, they're not pulling me by my nose and take me out the pasture to eat. Lives of great men all remind us we should make our lives sublime, going ahead of us, leaving footprints on the sands of time. These are masters, masters of life. They have mastered the principles of behavior. They alone know how to live. They alone know how to behave under all circumstances. They don't offend you physically. They don't offend you mentally. They don't offend you psychically. They don't even offend you spiritually. And in fact, they can be led by the nose by you because they are an embodiment of love and compassion, and they cannot refuse anyone who comes to them. Even little children suffer not the little children that come unto me. You think these children can even pull them by their nose? This is the result. We see now that we have reincarnation and resurrection. We have a choice. Where do we have the choice? On where are we evolving to? We're evolving to resurrection, to a higher level of existence, in a different realm, and the choice is ours. Now, anytime the choice is realized, it would always be in a human body. You're never going to have the choice outside the human body to make the decision. You're always going to have this opportunity in a human body to make a decision. So think one moment how fortunate we are all to have been the only sperm that succeeded up the uterine canal to contact the ovum and became a human body, where all the rest died in the struggle. You see how fortunate you're all? You, I mean, me, everyone here. There couldn't be two of me at the same time, it'd be twins. Nature don't allow it unless there are twins there. But any time we meet the grade and one human being is born, we have realized a tremendous principle was at work. A principle of elimination and success established. principle of accomplishment was established. Therefore, you are not failures and cannot be failures. Failure is a result of your environmental thinking. You are all successes, you are all lords of yourself, because you made the grade to become a human being. Think of it. Anybody studying biology should know this by now. Right? The mere fact that you became that human being, you have performed the very first law of life, the law of self-accomplishment. This is the real you. This is what you've got to realize now. Why you can't fail. And the masters have said this. In spite of yourself, through the grace of God, we will get you there. Only because you made the grade to become a human being. See? Just think of it. Because you made the grade to become a human being and you can wake up to the realization, ha, here I am at last as a human body. This is the blessing. This is the grace of God. This is His mark or stamp of divinity on you. You are destined to realization in an incarnation, to be exposed to the divine truth and to realize it about yourself. Now the whole Dallas is not sitting in this room. How many people are sitting in this room? Their timing comes for them to realize it. They have need of many more sufferings, many more hardships, many more mental sacrifices, many more discontents, rise and fall in all their problems in life, to shake them up to a realization. Like one disciple, he lived with Master so long, and he said to Master, I know God is so great, I should like to spread His word all around. So, Master sent him in the village, says, well, go down in the village and find out who in the village want God. So he went in the village, asked at every house, what God? Look, man, I got my business to look after. Are you crazy? My wife is getting another baby. Oh, you must be nuts. I got a wedding to take care of next week. Everybody had some excuse or something. Nobody. So he came back to the master, says, he kept silent. So the master asked him, well, how you made out? Does anybody down there want to buy God? And he says, no, master. He says, all right, don't you see you're happy to be where you are? How many are interested? But those that are interested, it is those who have come to the realization of themselves, who can see the truth of themselves, and are not afraid to face it. Because you're not here to impress nobody. I'm not here to impress you. We are here to realize who we are. We are here to see our true potential. We are here to use them. And this is what we want. How to live a natural life that we can make the transformation of overcoming the reincarnational process into the resurrected process. This is the evolution. This is the real evolution. This is the real work. All other work was made for us. Even the big jobs out in the offices outside, in the big buildings, they're all made for us. We're not born or created by a divine command to go and become an executive of this. That is made for us, by our initiative, by our karma. But what are we made for? We are made to realize ourselves. We are made to be a channel for the divine expression. Once you realize that you made the grade to become a human being, you have to realize now that all the qualities of success to God realization are in you. All your creative nature is locked up in you. Now, the question comes up, how can we release this thing? How do we go about releasing it? We know it's there. We know where we're going. How do we release it? Well, let's go back to qualified men who have given us the way how to release it. Let's take Jesus for one. There are many in the East. But we are familiar with Jesus and his sayings, so we can understand it better. If thine eyes be single, this body is full of light. But let's see how many people can interpret it as what Jesus meant it to be. Very few. Jesus, when he spoke of it, he literally meant that when you look inside, you will see L-I-G-H-T, light of its true atomic nature. Literally, in that sense, he meant it. Now, to the spiritual student seeking to understand himself, this experience does exist. Anyone who has ever attempted to meditate sincerely has had this experience. He has had that experience, and he can vouch for that light. It's not hallucination. There is no need for any drugs to produce it. All that is required is love. That's why he said, love your Lord thy God with all your mind and soul and your neighbor as yourself. This love triggers that light out. Anyone who has seen the light can testify that the light has three distinct colors. There are many colors he will see inside of himself, but there are three distinct colors in here that will never go anyplace, was never invented by man, was stamped there by the divinity himself when he created this universe. The first color and the outward ring is a gold band, or the Holy Spirit as it is called by the Christians. In science, it's called the cosmic vibration of the universe. All matter has a vibration and is only distinguished by its rate of vibration. So speech in any language are different rates of vibrations in the consciousness. And when you hear a man talking in tongues, it has never been seen that the men who have had the experience of this consciousness talk in tongues in a conversational way. They talk in tongues in prayers. They may say a prayer in various tongues. But only masters who have this development can hold a conversation in any tongue. Now let's take a master like Sai Baba. Sai Baba is living today in India. Some people came to see him. There was a Japanese professor in Japanese and didn't speak a word in English, let alone Mariati. All he spoke was Japanese and very little Hindi. But there was a person there who could translate Japanese, and when the man was introduced to Sai Baba, before the translator can begin to translate, Sai Baba spoke to him in perfect Japanese, held a conversation for approximately a whole hour, and corrected the Japanese man in his grammar. Now, he is not speaking in tongues, but a few little prayers that happen in the tabernacles here in this tongue, you know. People get an awakening and they say they're speaking in tongues. That is not what we're talking about. That is not speaking in tongues. That's just prayers coming through, filtering down from that consciousness. We're talking of something that has to do with divinity for the first time. Now, he didn't only held a conversation in Japanese. He held it in many languages. German, Swiss, Dutch, French, Italian, perfect, and in fact correcting them as professors in their own language. See, this is a big difference. with our realized consciousness. It's a consciousness that has nothing to do with phenomena. Now this ring of gold is there, and you see it, and it stays with you for a long time, and you have to pass through it and develop in it. And you hear a high-pitched sound coming from it, and you hear it in your right ear. Now in the scriptures it is said that, "Lo, I turned to the east, and I heard a voice of God like running water, and like a trumpet behind me." People did not understand what the prophet was talking about. He was meditating and looked inside. This is the east of man, this is the western man, this is the northern man, and this is the southern man, because man is a miniature universe. "Lo, I looked to the east." This part has often been written in Oriental scriptures as the door of the east, or star of the east, or eye of the eastern eye. And it's the same thing on your dollar bill. You see it on top of the pyramid in the dollar bill. Where do you think they got their ideas from? I'll tell you a little story about that before I go too far out. While they were debating how to make the seal of this country, behind bar doors, and they did not know how to make up the seal, they were worried about the time. All of a sudden they heard a knock on the door. They wanted to know who it was, and they summoned the orderly of the day. And he opened the door, and entered a man, very dignified, wearing a cape with a high collar, with a briefcase in his arm. He walked right up to the table and said, "Gentlemen, here are the diagrams of your new seal. Put it down there." And while they were looking at it, he walked out. By the time they turned around to see where the man was, he had gone. And this is on record in the Congress, Library of Congress.
Oh, wow.
Where this man came from and where he has gone, no one knows. How did he have a complete plan for the U.S. deal? And even your dollar bill has that design on it. And that design of the eye in the pyramid is not an invention of that period. It is one of the oldest symbols of the East, representing divinity and man. The pyramid going this way, and the eye, third eye in man. And you will find the same design in all the Masonic lodges of the country. Did a Mason walk in and give it to them? How would he know that they were in conference at that particular moment debating the fact that they're going to make golden seal of the country? But this is on record. They do not know who it is, who that man is in the first place. He doesn't fit any person of the environment at the time, because everyone in the environment was well known and accounted for. It was a very small community. Where would he come from? He'd have to come a long way, and he'd have to ride some type of a horse or a vehicle to get there, to give it to them. Only the big boys up there know where he came from. Only the big boys know up there where he came from. Well, let's forget where he came from. Let's go on to something that... Well, that is on record, though. It is on record. You can read, get that in the Library of Congress. Now, the third eye is here. This is the door that Jesus talked of. This is the way to go back in. And there's a golden ring, gold, and inside the golden ring is blue. Now, the golden ring is called the Holy Spirit or Holy Ghost or cosmic vibration of the universe in matter. The blue is called the Christ intelligence, not Jesus. So you see why Jesus had to say, "The things I do, you can do also, and greater things you can do, or will do." It would be kind of ridiculous for him to say, "The things I do, you will do also, and not greater than me." You want to sound kind of ridiculous? When he fully realized that this thing was already in you, that this Creator had already placed this force in you, each human being being a replica of the thing, he himself a realized example of it. He knew all these levels inside. We don't know the levels because we don't know how to go inside to it. until we're shown to go in, then these levels are revealed to us. This is our heritage. We made the great to become a human being, we'll make the great to be realized while in the body. And he knew that. That's why he went on being an example from reincarnation to resurrection. Now, the blue is the Christ intelligence, that is the intelligence present in vibratory creation. Creation is based on its rate of vibration. Everything here is a rate of vibration. This is the only way we can differentiate it scientifically in the lab. Now, the intelligence inside of it now, that means the thing that brings it together and binds it into a matrix and gives it a purpose or an identity. This is called the Christ intelligence. Now let's see why they use the word Christ. In the East it's called Kotashtu Chaitanya, which means intelligently directing vibratory force. Now, in the Greek language, Christos or Christ means attainment. So when they are referring to the Christ intelligence, they are referring to an attainment of a consciousness in the vibratory structure of matter by man's own consciousness. Man has to arrive at this consciousness by personal attainment, personal effort. Then they say you are a Christos, you have attained, and therefore you are Jesus the Christ, you are David the Christ, you are Gopal the Christ or Krishna. The Hindu Christ is called Krishna. See, Krishna or Christ is the same thing. You can spell it K-H-R-I-S-H-N-A or C-R-I-S-T-H or C-H-R-I-S-T-N-A. Krishna or Christ, if you want to. It's all taken from the one concept, that it's the intelligent present in vibratory creation. Now, let's see what are its properties in that realm. In the gold ring, the first property, as I said before, is the communication. You can speak in tongues, you can heal, raise the dead and do forth many things. But you can communicate telepathically. You can see into the structure of matter. These are all the gifts of the Spirit, just from the lower level alone, from the Holy Spirit. You haven't even begun to go further into your true nature yet, the Christ nature in man. In the Christ nature of man, you're endowed with the ability to materialize your thoughts at will for the first time. Now imagine you're in possession of such a power, but you're untrained and egotistical. What would you do? You'll make a menagerie of this universe. You'll make a crazy house out of it, because you don't have no discipline, you don't know what to do with it. You'll say, drop dead, and the thing will drop dead. And you say, something else, and that will happen. So before you know it, all goes out of kilter. But this ability or this power is not bestowed on the undisciplined individual. It's not bestowed upon the egotistical individual, because you could never get past the first ring of the spirituality without all those wrong attitudes being washed out of your system. That's why it says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and its righteousness, the right attitudes, and these things will be added. See now why it says added? So these qualities come when the right attitude is established. Then finally, in the blue, there is a five-pointed white star, or silver star. Within the star, there is a door, and your consciousness goes through that door, and up into it, a crooked tunnel, right into the thousand-petal lotus. Now, this is where all the yogis stop. This is where revelations of the scriptures stop. Now this is where we begin to meditate. We don't stop there, we start there now. we begin at that level. From there on, bhajan, or true devotion begins. Simran, true identity begins. And then the five sangs, or the five names of God, comes through and take you up the Satlok, or the eternal existing force between manifested creation and the unmanifest creation. Way beyond now the thousand petal lotus. You see where we're going now? This is called the Shabad. Now you see what the masters are talking about. The path of the masters begin from there. Jesus is talking of that. It is there at that point. I and my Father are one. You see me, you see the Father. You're seeing dynamic atomic energy for the first time in crystallized matter, devoid of image or shadow, and cannot be photographed when not wanted to be photographed. No master you can photograph if he doesn't want you to photograph. You know Master Charan Singh? There was a girl with a camera, movie camera, and she was trying to photograph him, and a woman saw Master standing there. She says, Master, can I be in this picture? He says, well, you better ask that woman, but I don't think there's any more film to take you in the picture. So the girl who owned the camera did not understand what the master meant by that, because she'd only used half of the film. And she kept on grinding. And what came out of that whole set of film, you know what? The moment that woman asked to be in the picture, that was the last picture she could take. All the rest ran out blank. And only in that last end of the film, where the blank was the woman alone standing and there was no master. And the person is the wife of a very famous Dr. Kendra. And the doctor, when he saw that, he realized what the master was talking for the first time. He got shook up. For the first time, he got shook up as to the reality of a master. And the master told him, I don't think there is any film in that camera. But he didn't want to hurt her feelings. He said, I don't want you in the picture. You see, what he wanted to teach that woman was the lesson of this. She did not ask the right person to be in the picture. She asked the wrong person to be in the picture. The woman was photographing the master. And this other person wanted to be standing next to the master to be caught in the picture, hoping that she will go home with her friends and say, I was photographed with the master. Master read her thoughts so clear and loud. Had she gone and asked the woman, and the woman says, okay, Master, would you permit this woman to be in the picture with you? The Master would have granted her. But because her ego was so blatantly exposed, he taught her the lesson that he is not here to be made of something like him. There's another time. You remember Lahiri Mahesha? In the life of Lahiri Mahesha, this is a master who lived not too long ago. And a disciple wanted to photograph him so badly just to have a living replica of what this master would look like. And he didn't grant him that. So he came when the master was busy bathing. You know, wait, I'll get out from the bathtub or from the water, he's going to be exposed and I'll make it. And he busy shooting pictures of master, they're all over, one after the other, one after the other. There were 13 plates exposed. He ran home very happy, caught master in a napping, in what you call, in a very unusual situation, no way for him to refuse. He developed it. All he's got is the bench with the towel, the tub of water. There ain't no master in the picture. All 13 places exposed is the same thing. Here they are. So he's frustrated. He comes back. He says, Master, please help me. He says, aha, how can you capture the divine spirit in a camera? The divine spirit is light. Who can capture the divine spirit? He didn't realize that this man was at that level. You see, that the masters were in Satlok, the eternal level between vibration and non-vibration. That is pure total cosmic consciousness. This is God realization. I and my Father are one. When Jesus was alive, if somebody tried to photograph him, and he said that at that time, they'd have a heck of a time trying to explain it where he was.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to photograph a person at that level, because it is the divinity manifesting there at that moment. Now, you need a shadow to photograph a human being. You realize that? When we expose the camera to your body, what do you think really helps them to capture that film? If you don't have a shadow, if your body doesn't have carbon molecules that would diffuse the light at a certain rate, so that when it's exposed to a sensitive plate, they never take a picture of you. You think you can photograph this glass? What would you get? Let's say you put the camera right here and you shoot a picture of the glass. You only get the outside, but you never get the glass. What is the glass composed of? Molecules of silicon, atoms of silicon, chemicals of silicon. It's like a diamond now. So the light is passing right through it. In a realized master, he has overcome by his attitude the molecular structure that impedes the divine light in him. Now we're dealing in something vast and beyond our little literature of the scriptures and theology. We're dealing with the first scientific evidence of spiritual science, that man is indeed God in flesh. But man has to awaken this godness by the right attitude. And every evidence that to try to photograph this mechanism when that person is at that level of development. Now, this level of development is not something for a few people. It is for all mankind if they make the effort in this incarnation when they're exposed to it. You know, one time somebody tried to photograph Yogananda, you know. Yogananda was alive up to 1952. All the film is blanks. He didn't want to be photographed that particular day. Every time they expose it, all blanks. When a master wants you to have a record of his frame, he has to slow down in consciousness. Now in Lahiri Mahasaya was the same thing. When that devotee came and pleaded so much to him, says, "Master, at least give me one picture." He says, "Okay, tomorrow you come back here, I'll pose for the picture." And in the same case in Charan Singh, you know, he's only granting them, "I'll pose for the picture." You'll always hear he uses this term, "I'll pose for that picture." Goes to show you what he's doing. Now in Sai Baba's case, Sai Baba don't let too many people photograph him. Those who he grant, there's just a few pictures that have been photographed of him, and you will see the shadow in the picture that's being photographed. Now the pictures that Sai Baba materializes of himself have no shadow in them, and it looks like the chair is floating slightly off the floor, and it's out of line with the side beam of the wall. It's distinctly off line. Anybody look at it cannot explain that, because it's how that is that possible. You can see the line of the floor, and you'll see this chair is slightly offline, and there is no sharpness of it's all sharp in almost a three-dimensional relief. And you remember, I don't know if you came down to my house in you saw it. That's one he materialized of himself. It has no, he had no one photographed that, but he permitted that, he does, you see, showing that he is in that state already. Now, he says, this is nothing for one of these men, this is for all mankind. And they give you the technique. He doesn't say to stop loving Jesus. In fact, he makes you conscious that Jesus did it. See, most people don't even realize what Master Jesus did, you know. That this is a thing that you can go in and awaken. We're dealing with a technique of how to go in. And we know what to look for. There's a gold ring, a blue light in that ring, and there's a five-pointed star. And that five-pointed star is like a door. You pass through it. And when you pass through it, you see yourself outside of yourself. And there you get the first experience now of living and dying daily in the Lord, like St. Paul. Now this is not astral projection. Astral projection begins from the solar plexus. Soul travel begins at the third eye, Trikuti, point between the eyebrows, where Jesus is talking of. This is something that comes up. Now, Paul Twitchell spent many years developing soul travel, and he calls it Ekankar. But Ekankar, or soul travel, only goes up to one level. It doesn't go right away up to Satlok, because you need a master to take you there. You need a master to bring you there. I am the advocate, what Jesus said. I am your guide on the inner realms. None cometh unto the Father but by me. No one can enter cosmic consciousness except by the Guru, because the Guru is a living manifestation of God, one who has attained. So how is it possible for a man, after he gets up in that level, is going to say he found God by himself? Impossible. Now you understand why gurus exist, why masters exist. I am the advocate. You see, that what is an advocate in French? An advocate is a lawyer, one who pleads your case. If we have come from a realm of reincarnation and striving to reach a realm of resurrection and overcoming certain ignorances, we certainly can't plead our own case by ourselves. In an earthly court it's looked down upon, and the heavenly court is even looked down worse. Very few people can really plead their case. But they have one or two instances where it's done, but it still has reference to a guru, that some guru steps in for that moment and gives them the key. A master comes in all the time to take you on. That's why a master is important. Now, there was a saint called Swami Pranamananda. He meditated for years and had wonderful experiences in meditation, but he could never make the bridge with that higher consciousness, with God, the full realization. And he went to his guru, Lahiri Mayasha, and he said to him, Master, I want to enter that state permanently, but I can't seem to get there. I see God in you manifest, but would you help me? And Lahiri Mahesh says, okay, I'll meditate upon it. Go, I will intercede. I will intercede. I will plead your case. I will absolve you of the last vestiges of karma. I will pay your debt for you now. I can afford to offer a spiritual bank reference or credit in your name. Do you follow what is involved in this thing? This is what we call the darshans again. The intercession, the love, the advocate, the pleading. So Lahiri Mahesh that night meditated. And Prabhananda went home, and that same night, at a specific time he used to meditate, he burst right into the pure cosmic for the first and final time. He never came out of that state, except to come back down into the body to live and perform his duties. But then, after he was in that state, he came to his guru, and he made this remark, blessed is the guru, because he alone absolves us from our karma. But guru, how can I now live in this world without any income?
I'm such a young man, and I don't want to take charity. So the guru says, apply for a pension in the company you're working for. Well, a young man applying for pension below the pension age, you could imagine what would happen. What are you going to get? He went and applied for his pension, and he had to see the company doctor, and he told the company doctor what was happening. He said, I was at times when I'm doing my work, a sensation of current seems to come up in the back of my head and like make me unfit to do my duty. But Lahiri Mayash had already telepathically placed in the mind of the doctor to grant him his pension, his resignation, with a very high stipend, because he was physically unfit to perform his duty. From a medical standpoint, he was granted his high, pension, and he went back to his ashram or house, and he followed his meditation all through the years after. But the thing is, he did not depend on charity. He had his pension, or he might have kept on working and still carry on his meditation classes, like Lahiri Mayasha did. See, Lahiri Mayasha worked as an engineer during the day, and at night he had his meditation classes. And his boss, who was an Englishman, said to him, was looking very sad one day, and he said to his boss, "Why are you sad?" He said, "I have some very distressing news of my wife who's ill." So he said to his boss, "Don't worry, I'll get some information for you." So the boss said, he calls him Ecstatic Babu. He says, "Ecstatic Babu, I know you're an unusual man. You're not a very usual person in this office, but I can't conceive how you will transcend time and space to get some kind of information about my wife who lives in England." So Lahiri didn't pay no attention to him. He just went outside in the yard. He sat down and he meditated. Came back and told him, he says, "You know, your wife is well and she's writing you a letter. You'll receive it soon." This boss of his looked at him as if, well, that's human, the old boy, you know. He must be nuts. Anything can happen under this Indian sun. So he let it go at that. Not too long ago, he received a letter. His wife is en route to India from England, and she's well. And she arrives at the office. She walks in the room. Instead of going to her husband, she walks over to this Indian old man and says, "Reverend sir, it was you who appeared in my room, and I was instantaneously healed, and I got up to write my husband a letter." Now, did he transcend time and space? Huh? This is what I'm trying to say. At that level, there is nothing. And this is true. This goes on all the time with the devotees of Master. There is that communication, there is that link, based on devotion.
I want to ask one question. When I was in Bhutan some time back to visit you, you made a very sharp distinction between self-realization and God-realization.
Yes.
Would you like to say a couple of things?
Self-realization deals with all the development up to 1,000 petal lotus. You follow me?
Yes.
And it deals with all the lower chakras. It deals with Hatha Yoga and everything. All this is self-realization. No. God-realization begins at the 1,000 petal lotus and goes up to the 5 levels of consciousness above the 1,000 petal lotus that leads into the unmanifested state or non-vibratory state of God, which is Satlok. It takes you to Satlok. Now the masters do not stop at the 1,000 petal lotus. They stop at the Satlok, which is above. Now, it is there where the real masters or saints exist. That's why it's called the Satmat, the path of the saint, or the higher master, the masters of cosmic consciousness. There is where Nibbikalpa Samadhi is all the time. Saint in the Nibbikalpa Samadhi stays in that Satluk state. That is the God realized state. Now below Nibbikalpa Samadhi, we have Sabirkalpa Samadhi, and that is in the thousand petal lotus state. You see, now we said Parabrahm is beyond Brahm. So if man is praying to, or calling on God as Brahm or Brahman, he's still calling below the thousand petal lotus. He has to call on Parabrahm, which is beyond Brahm. It is in the Satluk state, or the unmanifest state, or the non-vibratory state of creation, where the pure intelligence and pure love is residing. Now, in Sanatana Dharma, or Vedanta, God is often referred to as Sat Chit Ananda. Sat is the Satluk state. There is where the existence is manifesting from the unmanifest. There is where existence is coming out in vibration. That is the highest
two.
The cosmic song. And the Word was with God in the unmanifest state. And the Word is God. The Dun is God. Cosmic law or cosmic sound, the Bani, is God already. And the Word was made flesh. That Dun became matter. Slowed down in vibration and became crystallized atomic energy. Now, and became flesh and dwelt in man. So you hear the Dun in the right ears all the time. Eventually you hear it in the third eye or Trikuti, right here. Now, it pulls you up. You see, it pulls you up past the thousand petal lotus. So the masters will say, when you get the Satlok, from there on the Dun takes over. From there on, God is a cosmic sound or cosmic word or logos, is the escalator into the unmanifest. This is where we're talking God realization. It is a capstone between self-realization and God realization. The self-realization deals with all the levels below. It deals with all the various levels below. All the different chakras. It deals with all of Patanjali sutras and everything. That's all with self-realization. But the above that is God realization. But you must have self-realization in order to comprehend God realization. You must have your A, your BA, your MA before you can have your PhD. How about a little meditation? Good. And you have to continue in that peace. That this begins to saturate yourself. Now, beginners may not see it, but people who they are affiliated with or associated with will see a change, a light in their face. That is what attracts them to them. They want to know what they're doing now, what is altering their whole inner structure. That's why when Jesus said, let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify the Father which is in you. He was referring to the result of meditation. This inner light that you are trying to perceive in meditation, it starts to radiate now from the mechanism. And you don't see it yourself, and you may think that you're not advancing or not getting results, but you are getting results. Because it's only those who can see it in you, or who know you, and see the change, they can recognize there is a change in you. What it is, they don't know, but you know. But there's something in you that attracts them out. And it's the attitude, and it's the strength that comes from it. Because you know now, you have the keys how to go in. That's what Jesus said, unto you are given the keys of the kingdom, unto the multitude men. You have the keys of how to go in and tap the inner reservoir of peace.
wherever you are, whatever you're doing, it's not to run away from obligation, but it's to face obligation with this peace. There is where divinity really is. There is where spirituality is. Spirituality is not religious fanaticism. It has nothing to do with churchianity. Spirituality has to do with hammering out divinity in the flesh by a day-to-day involvement with you and God. You hammer out your own divine gold, G-O-L-D. You bring it into manifestation through the help of masters, saints, and those disciples who live on the earth who are meditating. Why Jesus said, when two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. This is an amplification process, like a loudspeaker, like an amplifier. It increases the volume of your depth of meditation, and the overflow from others helps you to go deeper into yourself, to study yourself. By your own self, you can go so deep that you need the assurance, you need the amplification, you need an added volume. So group meditation was emphasized a long time by the Master Jesus as a method, a natural method of amplifying one's consciousness, a method of increasing the volume of one's depth in meditation. That is the origin of churches too. But they did not understand what he meant. Build me a temple that I may dwell in the midst thereof. So they went and built beautiful architectural buildings, forgetting the human body, that this is the real temple. And it's like the song my friend Queen Anna sings with Sam Brown or Sam Jones. All day long he polished the church pew and the brass in the church. Saturday he came to pray on Sunday. And he said, this cannot be, Sam, because you know what you are and you know what we are. So Sam went home that night and he was in torture and torment with his family and he tried to pray. Just then he heard a knock and he saw the Lord Jesus walk in. And Lord Jesus says, Sam, do not cry. You have no better luck than I, who've been trying to get into that church for the past 20 years. Divinity has nothing to do with our outward life. It's an inward process. It's a hammering out of the softer nature of yourself. It is a refining process. It's a daily refining process. This is the divinity you're looking for. It's not, we're not here to impress no one, because each one here comes with a certain need, a certain goal. And the final goal is that we all want to go back home to this divine consciousness, which is where we all belong in the first place. But each one of us is bringing his own cross, his own sack of troubles on his back. There's a story in India. There's a temple called the Shiva Temple. And a man who's a pilgrim is carrying a sack of stones on his back. And it's considered his cross or his problems, and he went in this temple to Shiva and he said, Lord Shiva, I got lots of problems. Why in this incarnation you make it so tough? Could you give me a smaller problem, a smaller karma? Well, in front of the statue of Shiva there were various sacks of different sizes, and all of a sudden the temple, the statue in the temple opened his eyes and looked at the man and said, oh man, I have compassion on you. Put down your sack. Pick up any one you think you can carry. It is yours. so the man was so happy to hear the idol talk, he dropped his sack and he ran for the smallest little thing that he could pick up. And he tried to lift it, he couldn't lift it. Frustrated, he tried the next size one, couldn't lift that. And he tried and tried, eventually, you know what he picked up? The sack he brought with him. He couldn't take other men's problems. Because you cannot carry another man's cross. You carry your own cross. Your own cross is the process of your own thinking. The program heredity, the program karma, that is yours. You don't take no one's, you take your own. And your own is well fitted out for you. It is not more than you can bear. Because all these things come to pass, but not to stay. If they were come to be a permanent thing in your life, you'd never make the grade. Because they are temporary. You pass through. Well, folks, I guess you kids gotta go to school, eh? School? Well, I don't know. Everyone's got a cross to carry. In fact, your cross is lighter now than the other man's cross. Always go with a happy attitude. School is still made for you, not you for the thing. All these things were made for you within a certain framework of the environment and the society. There was a time in my days you can drop out. It was never considered something bad. No one ever thought of it because in those days it was never compulsory to be educated. Today, because of the growing competition in society and the tremendous responsibility of the world around us, we are born into an environment only because this is a karma we have to work out. So we are placed in it to learn a lesson. What is the lesson? Endurance, fortitude, sense of self-respect, and gratitude. Because you have to be grateful to your parents to make it possible for you to be here, though it may not be the best situation for you at the moment, but at the same time it gives you the fortitude to appreciate it and persevere. It gives you the discipline that you need to concentrate in meditation. You can't have a wavering mind in concentration. You can't be wavering all over the joint trying to find God. You got to be like a needle pointing north all the time. That calls for tremendous dedication, devotion. So once you bring this into focus in your daily work in school, you will have the same opportunity like all the masters to go through. Master Charan Singh, who's alive, is both an engineer and a lawyer. Now he had to struggle through all those courses to get up there, then before he can branch up and says, now he's a spiritual teacher. Master Yogananda had to struggle through his Bachelor of Arts studies. And many other masters had to struggle through. Some of them were just getting through with the barest passing grades. But that's the unimportant thing. As long as they fulfill the environmental obligation that their parents have allowed them to partake in. You see what I mean? Now, they know their life work may not be that. Many people's life work may not necessarily be the thing that they trained in or educated in, because their whole spiritual nature and creative nature can come out and be something else. But as long as this obligation and this opportunity is brought into our lives for a limited period, we must learn to have spiritual teamwork. We must learn to harness our senses. It gives us the freedom. See, as I say, you're not responsible for where you're born, but you're responsible with whom you associate all the time, even in school and out of school. Because group meditation can be group study. You can all exchange your ideas and what you're learning, because the more you talk of it to the next person, the more there's a different slant or view of looking at a thing and gives you a better understanding of what you're studying. Sounds kind of dreary, dogmatic. No, but this is what you have to live through it, and don't fight it. It's not to fight. It's not to take it in stride. I remember David didn't want to go back to school. But I say, how are you going to associate in this spiritual life if you don't go back and do the thing? Huh? Same with Randy. Randy was going to drop out. I said, oh no, you don't come in my ashram or my place and just sit down and expect I'm going to be out there running away this sun and you're going to sit down and meditate and don't want to go to school. That can soon drop out. You go back. And it broke the concept. He's free. This is it. The starting to fight. Once you get the disciplining of your consciousness, you are free. Because you're not doing it to impress nobody. You're not trying to pass 100% or no percent. You're trying to get through an obligation by the grace of God. This is all because you have already made the grade as a human being. You will make the grade through your obligation by God's grace all the time. You are not a failure. You were never intended to be a failure. You were intended to get through your obligation.
Don, everything, you know, the masters tell you to do everything in their name or in God's name.
Yeah.
Well, is that when you do it? Like when you're doing any kind of an action, no matter how small,
Seva.
You're always doing that conscious thing, saying,
yeah.
You live with the middle tongue,
yeah.
Dedicate this to you.
Right. And once you dedicate this consciousness to him, it is he who directs the divine souls or disciples or other masters to pull you through. And he doesn't have to come down from an ashram to do it to you. He can drop a few pages out in the yard, or he can let somebody run into you and all of a sudden discuss the subject, which you had experience from. Take the book and at random open it up just what you're supposed to know about and go ahead and pass your exam. And like Yukteswar Yogananda said this, he says, I pity the man who has to look after the midnight oil, and God can also be in the classroom too. You see, some people think that God can't be there, but God is consciousness and intelligence and energy, and he is in you. That's what I said before. The fact that you are here, memory, concentration, love, these three qualities will pull it in. Because there is a funny, strange way these things seem to fall into your life. That you get just the right information for what you need to do that moment. This is it. Many of us have had this experience in whatever cross you're carrying, or wherever your cross is at the moment, or whatever station of the cross you're at the moment. That is the particular obligation. That teacher loves to hear those battles. Huh, teacher? Don't you love to hear such nice words? The students love you. Sh-
Satri will get you nowhere.
Oh, that is very good discipline, sister. You passed the grade.
No, it's true. As I was telling her, one way to get all the classes to pass is to write on the blackboard, "From now on, I'm teaching you how to fail." So everybody ain't gonna wanna know they're gonna fail, they wanna know how to pass. So before you know it, hey, don't give me inferior education. That's one way to make your students interested in their education now. Just write on the blackboard and tell them, "From now on, I'm gonna teach you how to fail all your exams." Not that you're gonna fail them. See, that is true. They have all been students. They have to go through. They have to go through a physical body and go to school. In fact, imagine the masters of the future. What the problems will be with them? They have to know binary theorems and all kind of things before they'll ever make the grade to become out of a guru. They've got to go through all the computer and calculus and everything, because the education system is going to be that you don't get out of school until you're age 32. At least, one master is an engineer and then he's a lawyer. That takes lots of education to get there before he even became a teacher. So he didn't shirk his responsibility. He went on and studied. But it's not trying to study with the idea you have to make 100% mark. It's the idea that you have an obligation to complete, and that there is a passing grade, and you make it with the grace of God and complete it and get it behind out of the way. You've done the job. This is the whole idea. To do the work, not to shirk the work. It's not to be afraid to face the work. See, you don't want to be like the ostrich that buries his head in the ground and the slightest noise. And you don't want to. The idea is to get through this story, to get through this period of life. And the masters are telling us the same thing. Our attitude, even to the end of life, is how to get through it, how to overcome these obligations. Because what are obligations? Opportunities, how to fail, or how to succeed. Now, if you never have an opportunity to fail, you don't know how weak you are. You would have an inflated ego and think you're a very strong person. But the moment you fail, then you see the weakness in you. You see the limitedness of you. Then you begin to see the humility in you. Then you have an opportunity now to resuscitate yourself, regenerate devotion, regenerate humility, and regenerate strength. You were able to tap this reservoir in yourself for the first time. You're really definitely interested in tapping it, if you never had it on. I know it's getting open. Folks have to go home a long way. That's all right. That's because you're linked on to the same frequency. You're linked to the same frequency.
The important thing is that you can hear it. Just keep on going. Don't stop. Hear it and keep going.
The people who work at night,
you must hear that they can keep on going and don't stop.
The fact is that you recognize its existence, the fact that it does flow to you.
The important thing is your devotion and dedication to it. Just keep it.
Oh, the YWCA, I would imagine, yeah, right. I've never been in
I'll be between Houston and Dallas. And good night. The young jumps on his back and hold on. That's God help yourself attitude. But you ever see a mother cat with its kitten? What it does with its kitten? He picks the kitten and put it where he puts it. So this is the difference between being a monkey and trying to exert your own ego on a monkey's mother and jumping from arm to arm. Heaven helps those who help themselves. Baby monkey hangs out to mama monkey and the two of them move around. And that's the heaven help those who help themselves. But the heaven who really helps is like a mother cat and her kitten. The mother cat with a kitten. The kitten is here, and he wants that kitten to go over there. He's going to pick it up by the neck and take it and place it over there. And that kitten has so much confidence in its mother knowing what's best for it. And this is the difference between divine will and my will.
Sort of like effortlessness.
All right, effortlessness. Divine Mother willing. Divine Mother willing, it happens. If she's not willing, nothing happens. You've been along so long with this study now, you've had too many experiences to see Divine Mother's manifestation. What more do you want? You're still questioning the Divine Principle? How it works?
No, I don't understand exactly why.
You don't understand what?
It depends on Divine Mother.
Divine Mother willing, all things will happen.
Yeah, and I said I don't understand why sometimes the low period.
The lull period is not Divine Mother's problem, it is your problem.
I'm shocked, you really can't blame it on Divine Mother.
You can't blame the gap between two waves on Divine Mother. There's always a gap between, no two waves are riding on top of each other. You ever see that in the ocean? There's always a gap between each one. There is going to be a lull, that's Ram. You should understand the principle of Ram by now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there is a lull.
Oh, that's right. It's not as long.
The principle of Ram?
A couple hours is better.
You better teach him the principle of Ram. You should know it by now.
Resistance, adjustment, mutation, mode. Saturation, line.
All right. You heard the principle of Ram.
Could you go through that again, please?
Yeah, one more time. I don't know another word.
Resistance, adjustment, mutation, and mold, and then saturation period, lag, recurrence.
Okay. That's the devil. That's your devil.
Oh, that's right.
All right, spell devil backwards.
Live.
That's how you really live your life, in a period of resistance, adjustment, mutations, and mold, saturation, lag, and recurrences, up and down the ladder of life. You have lived life now. You know the difference between ignorance and truth. You know what it is. If there's no devil, there's no devil, but these particular progressions. So the lull is a natural principle. You gotta have breathing space too, you know, between one experience to the next experience. So that's true.
Oh, no, actually.
So that is what we're talking about. Divine Mother. You have it in a good example of that principle when Jesus came out of the coffin, you know, and he saw Mary Magdalene, and she thought she was looking for her master, and then she recognized someone standing and didn't know it was her master, and took him for the gardener who took care of the ground. And then when he spoke her name, Mary, and she said, "Master," what she tried to do to him? Right. What he told her.
Don't touch me, I haven't
offended. I haven't what?
Offended.
Good. So there's a lull period, right? He was like wet cement. Coming out, he's a butterfly coming out of the cocoon. The gossamer wings of spirituality is still wet. That divine state is still there. He didn't want negative conditions, like material things of people's attitudes touching him yet. He wanted to crystallize in that state. He wanted to harden in that state. It was his first experience in that state. So until he had cured, the curing process on his atomic structure had taken place, he couldn't let them touch him. We were dealing with atomic science. We have to understand the peculiarities of it. And all the peculiarities of it are in the statements of Jesus. Every statement there is an atomic peculiarity or principle, well defined. You just got to understand it. As I say, it's like wet cement. You can't put your finger in wet cement, so it happens to leave an impression, right? But when it's dry, what you can do? You can put your hands in it. It's cured. You can work with it. Now he's coming through from one level to the next level. He's in what is called the plastic state of pure consciousness. Whereas Mary was in the concrete state of a lesser consciousness. She'd be like a pin. And he would be like a glue. If you stick a pin into glue, what would happen? It'd leave an impression in the glue. But let the glue harden, and you couldn't stick it. The two have to reach a degree of hardness or crystallization, but of different ratios of vibrations. He would be at a different ratio of vibration, and she would still be at another ratio of vibration. Yet there is an interplay of the two forces. He would beam down his force on her now and raise her up to him. And he had to visit his disciples on three occasions to give them that proof after he came out of the grave. He gave them the evidence in the room when they were by themselves and singing the blues. They're hanging their head down low like a St. Bernard dog sitting on an old barrel or something. It's just a way to live, you know. The master's gone and leave us all in the ground. Well, he came back through the walls and come through the door. So right away they jump up, apparition, ghost. Second time he came back, Dalton Thomas was there. Let me see where this ghost you guys talking about. You are the field. All right, come along field, Mr. Scientist. He wasn't Dalton Thomas as we think he is. He was just a natural scientist. He wanted to test, experiment. Good. But that was not enough. Master always ate to them. So the third time, what did he do? He fed them, and he ate with them. So he has three ways to test a resurrected master. When you see the Master Jesus or any of the masters who passed on, and they come to you in your deepest meditation, these are the three levels of test that they are appearing to you, not from a figment of imagination or hallucination. They will materialize to you in the room. You wouldn't see a single shadow if the light is shining. You can't photograph them. There's a vibration that's passing to you by telepathic communication through the eyes. If they want to embrace you, you touch them, they'll touch you and hold you. But the third time they come, they will eat food with you, and they will leave a little portion in the plate. That little portion will not decay under any condition. You don't need to refrigerate it. Once they have touched it, it's transformed, it's transmuted. You've got testimony that they really came to talk to you. Then you know for sure that there is a higher science, and it's the true religious science, the science of the soul. This is our destiny. This is where we're going. This is our real realization. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, look how much growth you have made. Love, compassion, mercy, strength, humility, devotion, all these qualities are being developed in you. Can't beat that.
You know, I was telling about Peter before. He was running from the Indonesian government. He had a big price on his hand. He met this master, and he is very hungry, you know, no food. Mm-hmm. So the master invited him to eat with him. And they went to the table. I guess there were other people there. And the table was empty. And he's very practical. He deals with bullets and lives. That's rather charming. I think 50,000 men maintained millions of people in Indonesia. You know. They killed, they didn't take prisoners. So there's no food on the table. So Jesus, he was familiar with Western philosophy, he was Western, very educated. He says, well, you know, Jesus said, he said, ask and you shall receive. You understand, this is a Christian concept. You know, he was born educated. So he says, ask and you shall receive. Oh, yes, sure. You didn't believe, you know. He says, well, of course, you don't believe, then you cannot ask for food. Because you don't believe. He prayed. He prayed for the food and asked. And Peter is not sure at this stage. If he shut his eyes for a fraction of a second, if they were constantly open, suddenly there was food. Mm-hmm. And there was simple bread, mm-hmm. cheese, and something complete. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't there. He knows it wasn't there. He's not sure if he shut his eyes for a fraction of a second. Mm-hmm. He transpired. His food, he ate. Mm-hmm. He was
satisfied.
Satisfied. Mm-hmm. And the master, he could do it, but he asked. But he couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
He could not.
What?
Now you see what our education do to us.
Yeah. Well, that's what it did to him. He was going hungry because he couldn't believe to ask. So he was going hungry. He was starving to death.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have died because he couldn't believe. He wouldn't believe to die yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the master, and after that, he, I don't know, he just changed it. Maybe he knew death that he, I think it changed, because after that, he didn't worry about his food. It kind of came. I guess he wasn't able to pray for it like that, but it kind of came. It changed us quite a bit. He was allowed to see this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then he told the master, he said, why don't you, you know, the West, you know, we have Billy Graham and everything, and we should go out and evangelize, you know, why don't you go out and save the world? You know? I forget he related, but it was similar to what you said before. They just, you just happen upon them, that's all. You don't, they don't go out and have a crusade, you know, or something.
You're not sorry about it. Getting good at making pictures, providing food for all starving people.
You know, funny thing, Bob Raymond told me, they don't collect no money from nobody. They always got food that nobody brings. And everybody has a comfortable meal three times a day.
Nobody used to cook it? Oh, boy. Now, first enough.
Yeah. Oh, just a minute. No, no. And give you a little push out. This is a spiritual food blessed by the Master. There are two ways to take it. One, you can put it on your mouth and eat it, forget about it. Two, you can take it and put it in the third eye and ask for his blessing to liberate you in this incarnation, and eat it. Or keep a portion of it and put it among some candy and give a little of the candy away, but keep that portion as a sort of a sweet action. Who's first? Whoops, the battery broke.
This is regular candy.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, what you might call seed was given to me. I'll give some more candy. We have some more. Give you all a little piece. Go ahead and eat this. And you just put it in with the more candy.
Yeah.
The vibrations extend to that, and you just always keep adding more. You don't have to keep the original ones you get. Transmit it to the other. And, I always keep it in my refrigerator. So that all the food is welcome to the master. The physical food represents spiritual food. The representation of food our spirit
needs.
You find that the master is chief disciple always in charge of.
See, in an ashram, it's only the advanced person can handle food. It's permitted to handle food. The less developed individuals are not permitted to handle food. They are fed. But the advanced disciple is allowed to handle all the food next to the master. See, because the food transmits everybody else. The food, the spiritual force is transmitted through the most advanced person through his hand into the food.
This will get sticky, we
should
eat
this now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll get some more and give you all. I'll buy some more.
Some
candy.
Of the
wrappers are sticking up. Mm-hmm. I don't have any put it in with it and give it to you.
It's called prasad.
I still have. We've been adding to the one that you can use.
Sharon Singh, the man who initiated me, Sharon Singh, Colonel Berg. Colonel Berg incidentally was the man of the first island that was captured in the South Pacific. And he went over to where is Sharon Singh? Sharon Kernberg is in the hospital. Phone. Eventually, through the Air Force, somebody had heard of Sharon Singh. So, on one of his leaves, he took a plane and went over. Got to the ashram and Sharon Singh was just ready to leave. But he granted him, I think, about 5 or 10 minutes interview. And so he told him he'd heard of him, and he felt that he wanted to be initiated by him. And he said, well, Sharon said, do you know the requirements? He said, no. What are they? He said, well, you must be a vegetarian. He said, and he said, well, as of this morning, I'm bacon and eggs, but no more meat for me. I'm a vegetarian as of right now. Well, no drinking. No alcoholic beverages. Well, as of last Tuesday, I think this was Friday, I'm off of alcoholic beverages. Well, good morrow life. He said, well, my wife sees that. Well, maybe not quite that flippant answer, but in other words, he qualified. And he said, well, you have to promise to meditate most time each day. So I will do that. And since he'd been a man who had been through the Air Force discipline and so on and all, he knew within himself he could do what he determined to do. And he had put it in set, and Sharon saying that he could. And he said, well, you're supposed to be on this for 6 months prior to initiation. And he said, but stay here. Oh, stay here. And he left. So Colonel Berg went back to the guest house and so on, and immediately became extremely ill. And he got away for 3 weeks. And finally, this day, the fellow had been waiting on him, came in, and Colonel Burton said, how do you feel? Colonel Burton said, you know, son, I feel wonderful. And then he smiled and said, yes, the master just came back. The master came on in and initiated. He had been going through a lot of karma. The master had been helping him work off a lot of karma for that illness. And immediately, he made Colonel Burton one of his representatives here in the state to initiate people. So you imagine the spiritual stature of that man. And all of you good guys. Anyway, he said that they were having guests, the master was having guests, a party for Westerners. And, similar to the story we tell about carrot juice at the Yogananda, you know, the girl came, someone looked around and here was this little bowl of stuff, and Master was just dipping out, you know. Master, hand me that napkin over there. It was a nice white napkin. He just spread it over the bowl and just continued to dip out, you know. And it was full, and it was through, you know.
Like
that
story
about
Yogananda. Gets his hands in that food, you know, and that lady that was visiting said, I want to eat any of that food. All of a sudden she noticed that his disciples weren't eating any of their food, they were only eating that stuff that he had dipped his
hands in. Yeah. She made me laugh. Just that big brown figure, I don't know what he was doing it, and I'm going to put that in my mouth.
She did take funny.
No, she had it. She said, food never tastes like that. Her mouth was tingling all over, her stomach all the way through, her whole head was like an energy. And she just had she was not in that room. And she never felt hungry for the whole next day. Till they brought food to forgive them. Never had no craving for anything. Like everything suspended itself. But you can't forget those big brown fingers.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, Dave. Take it easy.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
How about that? Oh, how you doing? Fine. Gosh, I thought you were back in Houston.
Well, I have been there and back.
You going to stay for a while?
Leaving. Leaving again, yes.
Well, shoot. Wish we could get together with you.
Yeah, it was great.
It's morning. Good to see you.
Yeah, I'll be
here
tomorrow.
Are you going to the wedding?
Sure. See, I'll try to get up tomorrow night.
Okay.
In case I'm not there, wish them.
It's all right.
It's okay. It's okay.
Many happy to
be here tomorrow. Okay.
Will do.
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
It gave me certain confidence in the reality of things.
It takes time, but that is the most important thing is to get to yourself.
Yeah.
Man, know thyself, you know, this is worse than all our whole search.
Yeah.
But it's nice to meet you.
Yes,
looking forward to see you again.
Yeah.
Bye bye, sister. Take care of yourself.
It's only a certain cycle of years, and there are four yugas. Now you have Kali Yuga, which represents your Iron Age. It's a period when the consciousness of man and his development are so crystallized that it doesn't go beyond any more than the bare structure of matter, visually by the five senses. He has no comprehension of its inner workings, as its magnetism, its electronics, and so forth. A piece of wood is a piece of wood, a spade is a spade, a stone is a stone. That's as far as his mentality gets. In your Iron Age or still consciousness. Now this is called Kali Yuga, or the dark consciousness, or the consciousness of pure sensory contact. Now this is divided into 1,000 years plus an ascending arc and a descending arc of 100 years on both ends of the 1,000. So you have 1,200 years to that cycle. This was corrected by Sri Yukteswar. Now then your next cycle would be what you call the Bronze Age. This is 2,000 years old, with an ascending cycle of 200 years and a descending cycle of 200 years, which gives you 2,400 years. So that gives you exactly 3,600 years. That's for the Iron Age and the Bronze Age together. Now the third cycle, which is called your Silver Age, that's only 33,000 years. That period only lasts for 3,000 years, and it has an ascending arc of 300 years and a descending arc of 300 years. So you have 3,600 years in that cycle. Now the last cycle, which you call your Golden Age, only lasts for 4,000 years, and it has an ascending cycle of 400 years and a descending cycle of 400 years, which gives it 4,800 years in total. Now if you add the 4,800, the 3,600, the 2,400, and the 1,200, we have exactly 12,000 years on one side of the cycle, ascending or descending. So if it ascends in 12,000, it will have to descend in 12,000 years. Recorded history shows man has been here 10,000 years, but that's not true. Man has been here longer, but this is what our archaeological facts are showing so far. There are more to show he's been just been discovered now that he's been here before that. All they can find though is 10,000 years of recorded history. So this does not fall in 12,000 years of the descending arc from the golden period to the dark period. See, a golden age to a dark age or a iron age is exactly 12,000 years on the descending arc. On the ascending arc is 12,000 years. 2 times 12 is 24,000 years. Your clock span is 24-hour day. They have to coincide. You see, your cycles must coincide with your time span. So we live on a 24-hour period, or a 24,000 cycle span. It took Sri Yukteswar to correct this. Now we have had approximately 4
24,000 year cycles
already.
That man has been on this earth four times 24,000. Now the sages, they say, where does the man get this type of information from? Well, our earth is only 4.5 billion years old, carbon deposit found so far, as the age of the earth. Now let's multiply 4 times 24,000, and what do we get? 96,000 years. Alright. In the ruins of Titicaca in Peru, it shows that man has been here over 130,000 years. Now, is 4 cycles enough to compensate for that reading? No one add up, eh? So now let's see if a yoga which is based on the miscalculated number of 4,370,000 years as the period of Kali Yuga would last. Now let's see if we multiply 4 times that whole period. If Kali Yuga will last 4 million, and let's say the next Dwapara would last about 8 million, and Treta would last about 12 million, and Sat Yuga would last about 20 million, add up all these millions, don't make sense either, because the earth is only 4.5 billion years old and man could not been here that long. There has been a miscalculation due to the cataclysmic action all through the years that threw the thing off cycle. So Sri Yukteswar is saying that we've had more than 4 of these golden cycles, more than 4 silver cycles, more than 4 bronze cycles, more than 4 iron cycles, or what you call dark ages. We've had more than 4 of them. You see? Now, in his calculation, he's not concerned with what happened before, because if the only way you can reconstruct that, you'd have to work on the ascending cycle. So what has happened before is the descending cycle. You can't go back to the descending cycle too good to be accurate and find where it's off. So he's taking the ascending cycle. The ascending cycle is that the year man started again on the planet Earth, rediscovering the properties of matter in the form of electron magnetism, steam. This was his breakaway now from Kali Yuga. But that was not the end of Kali Yuga. That was not the end of the Iron Age. It was the break from the Iron Age. We had, from that day on, we had to go into the cusp, or the Sandhi as it's called, and we have so many hundred years in which it had to come out. Now, he is writing from the time this was noticed, and in the short space of the Sandhi, from the first discovery of it, when Graves and all these men came along and made these discoveries, from that time to Einstein, it's only been 164 years. The strides made from then to Einstein with the atom was 164 years. So it matches exactly what he's calculating. Now we are not in Dwapara, we are in the cusp again. We wouldn't get into Dwapara until we are the year 2000. We're still in the cusp, you see. So from that period on, we are in the Dwapara, or what you would call your Bronze Age. Now, these ages were written by the Greeks, who were exposed to a 4 cycle of gold, bronze, silver, and iron. But there have been so many gold, silver, bronze, and iron cycles that the Greeks are not recording before that. They're only recording the last one that they've gone through. It is that the Hindus, you have to go back to find where they got their information from. They went further back than that. See? So Sri Yukteswar is calculating on a different scale. And he's, every calculation that he made so far is exact. It falls in exact line, see? Now, question comes up in the holy science. What is the final goal? The golden age, right? Now, what would a man be in the golden age?
Like you
described, Satya Sai Baba. Yeah, Satya Sai Baba is living in this time span of a realized man that would live and walk in the golden age. See, in the golden age, man would have the ability to materialize his thoughts at will. And that is not a figment of imagination, this is strictly atomic physics now. The full range of his brain power, the 9/10 portion that is not being used according to scientists, would be fully active. How would it become active? It's not only based on the fact that his meditation is one process, and experimentation is the next process. It is based upon moving in with the planetary system and the sun closer to Alpha Centauri. As this planetary system moves into Alpha Centauri, within that apogee, when that time occurs, at that particular cycle in time, the radiation from Alpha Centauri will accentuate the mass brain on the planet to that state. Now, all the mass brain on that planet will not be in that state. Only a certain portion will be in that state. We have an example of it right now. The mass brains on this planet are not atomically interested in atomic physics. Do you know of a man living in the bushes of Africa interested in making an atom bomb? Except those who've been exposed to the missionaries. They're tribes of Indians running around in South America has never seen an airplane or heard of one, not alone see a gun, a musket, something that's been made so many hundred years ago. They've never seen a metal hatchet. There are areas of the earth where we're definitely having brains that are going to stand still when there's no progress in that direction. Radiations are not going to affect them. And there is no exposure for them. Strange. But this is with us all the time. Yet these are the individuals who, as Jesus says, will inherit your earth. The meek will inherit your earth, because when future archaeologists come back, they're only not going to find civilized world. They're going to find primitive worlds to base their calculations on destroyed civilized worlds. Our lost continents and all these things were considered the height of civilization in those times. But we are calculating from that lost continent ideas or lost city ideas versus the primitive man that is living in the area. Can the primitive man that live in that area be the example of the civilization that has left the architectural ruins there? See what happens to us? Where we are looking, we face this problem. You go into Mexico, you have ruins there. There are very few Indians in that Mexican belt have the capacity to bring out this idea of where this thing came from. And if you do get to them, they're not going to tell you much. And I grew up in South America, and I know the Amerindians themselves don't tell you much, but for what I've known of them, they all claim there was a time when there was a group of men or a race of men at war.